Hi, and welcome to the Indie Music Podcast, the podcast for independent musicians and other music professionals. We're your hosts, myself, Matt Denton, also known as Mojo, of Ragged Birds Music. I'm a recording artist and mix engineer. And Douglas Reynolds of Resonance Studio, a mastering and recording engineer. First of all, I wanted to thank everybody who's been listening, because I know I feel like we keep forgetting to do that. And we're right here on episode 10, and episode 10 is kind of a milestone. We didn't even know how the first one was going to go, and here we are 10 episodes in, and I know at least three people have listened. I don't know how many are actually listening, but for those three people, hey, thanks. And thanks for the kind comments.
our metrics are all divisible by three.
Someday we'll have nine. Do you mind if I set the scene?
I don't mind at all. Set it.
So we thought we'd do a mix comparison. Each of us are doing our own challenge, which we'll get to in a second. But I'm not sure if any of you are familiar with Mike Senior's great book, Mixing Secrets for the Home Studio. It's a good book. I just reread it very recently to see if there's any tips and tricks that I have forgotten since I used it to level up in about 2012, but it's a good book. I highly recommend it. But there's a companion website for this book. Mike Senior has thankfully put together this website, which we'll put in the show notes. And it's got, what would you say, at least 100 different sets of stems for you to download. More. Yeah, I bet there's more too, in multiple genres, to download for practice mixing. And they're, you know, professionally quality or small studio quality. Some of them are like commercially released songs, and you can just download the stems and use them to practice mixing. So, Doug, you had the great idea of picking a song from that selection to test with. And what was your challenge that you assigned yourself?
Well, specifically, my challenge was to mix a song in the most minimalistic manner possible, which included one main plugin. And then I found out in the process that I really needed a little bit extra. And so I ended up using a total of three plugins in the entire production.
Wow.
And it was purposefully trying to get the best mix that I could get in the most raw format, where later on I might do a lot more with this, but I wanted to see if I could get to a point where I was really only working on sugar type of things if I were to keep going with this.
Oh, the sweetness. Yeah.
Yeah. And so what I wanted was to have a really solid, balanced mix in a minimalist fashion. And the focus was on learning one plugin that I hadn't worked with before and trying to learn it to a point where I could use this in regular production.
And so this was a plugin that you hadn't really used. And so you used this challenge to familiarize yourself with the plugin.
That's correct. Yeah.
And it's, as I recall, I don't remember the name of it. It was
the BX console, the Focusrite console.
So it's got stages in it, kind of like, the Abbey Rhodes mastering chain or the Shep's.
Exactly. And it basically mimics an actual studio console that that Focusrite made back in the 70s.
Oh, okay.
And this one, it's not laid out the same. Obviously, in the actual console, it was laid out in a vertical fashion. In this case, because of digital screen real estate, it's packed up into columns and rows. It's a different layout than you would have on the actual mixer.
Sure.
But their goal on this one was to recreate that channel strip, basically. And so I was applying the same channel strip to every track and then working with every track as you would on a regular mixer. So that was kind of the goal.
So there's a channel strip. So it has an EQ, it has a compressor, it has a gate. Is that kind of what it had?
Yeah. So you've got individual input.
I'm trying to remember. I've seen it, but.
Yeah. You've got individual input and output levels, and then you've got your EQ stages and compression gate. You've got a little bit of you've got a sidechain that you can sidechain within itself to bring dry signal back in, and other filtered signals. So you can modify the original signal and then sidechain it back into the gate or into the compressor.
Cool.
On one of the caveats that I found is that I could not figure out how to sidechain multiple tracks together through it, which is something that I enjoy doing with some of the other plugins that I normally work with.
I mean, as opposed to busing them together, you sidechain them together?
Yeah. So I want, for instance, the bass to control compression, I want the kick drum to control compression on the bass. Okay. So every time there's a kick drum transient, it triggers the compressor on the bass, brings the bass down, allows the kick to come through.
So it dumps the bass out of the way for that transient.
Yeah. And I couldn't figure out how to do that. That would be something I would normally do. And especially in this genre of music, mm-hmm. I thought that that would actually be something this plugin would do. And I'm not going to say it doesn't do it, but in the time I spent with it, I wasn't able to figure it out. And I should also state, the other part of the challenge was that we were going to do this in under 6 hours. And right. I spent about, I think, 4.5 hours total on it.
Okay. Yeah, I spent 5. Some of that was going back after a day or two and kind of going, okay, I see what this needs. But we should probably mention what the song is.
Yeah.
It was All Hands Lost. Yep. The song was Ambitions.
Ambitions.
It's a heavy rock song. Almost in the style of Tool, or at least that's what the singer reminded me of. He reminded
me of too. Young and Maynard. That's why I chose it. It's like I really wanted to mix that song. And I think that was because of the vocals in it.
Yeah. Powerful song. I really enjoy it. I've had it stuck in my head for a week now.
Oh, I know. I've been enjoying, listening to, both our mixes over and over and over again. So I like it when you work with a song and you've listened to it so many times and it doesn't grow old on you.
Yeah. I find that no matter what song I've mixed, it sticks in my head because I've listened to it probably.
Yeah, just some are better than others to stick in
your head. True. Yeah, I did have an experience recently where I was like, please let me have another project so I can get this song new music, out of my head.
Also want to say that I'm going to post a link on the website with this podcast post to point back to that resource where all these stem tracks are available.
Exactly. So since we're still talking to you, this would be a moment where we would probably insert a snippet of your mix so that everybody could hear it.
Yeah.
And then we're back.
Yeah.
Just like that. So you had, you did mention that you had some side chaining issues. What was, was there a vibe you were going for when you were mixing, or were you mostly concentrating on learning the plugin and seeing what you could do with it?
Well, no, I was going for a vibe. I wasn't trying to create anything new out of the mix. I was trying to make the song what I believe they might have envisioned it being once all the raw recording tracks were coming together. I never did have an opportunity to listen to, other than what's on their website, any professionally recorded track. I don't know if they ever actually produced this fully or not, so there's only the tracks that were produced on the MIT website. But the idea for me was to try and take what's there and bring it together into a strong cohesive mix in a rock genre with a 90s vibe. And I don't know, do that in such a way that I didn't get in the way of it. So if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense.
And then I was really, I had the limitation on myself that it's going to be really hard to get in the way of it because of the limited tooling I was allowing myself to use in it.
Right.
And so then it was, how much can I do? I want to do the most that I can with what I'm working with here and see how far that'll take me, and discover what could this do for me, on a day-to-day basis if I were to choose to change my workflow.
Yeah, and I like that you gave us a time constraint. And I'm going to start doing that now with all of my practice mixes to see if I can just kind of like get more efficient and get my time down for how long it takes me. Because if you just let stuff go for as long as it takes you, then it's going to take you as long as you give yourself. It could take you a month or a week.
But we need to.
5 hours, I found, was pretty actually, it sounded like not very much. Or actually, it sounded like a lot, and then I started working, and then it sounded like, oh, maybe I won't get it. But it was actually a fairly comfortable, you said 6 hours, but if it was a very fairly comfortable, I was pretty done in 4.
Sure.
And that includes having to go find an application on the App Store to change FLAC files into WAV files,
because
Logic doesn't import FLAC files.
I think it's important to do that, and you set those boundaries for yourself. Because answer the question, when is the mix done?
Yeah, it's done when you stop working on it.
Yeah, exactly.
And even then it's not, because then the client comes back to you 3 weeks later and says, hey, can you raise the vocals in the third verse?
Right. The thing is that when that kind of thing happens, that what that means is, can you rebalance the entire mix for me?
Yeah, they don't know that. They think that they're just asking a little thing. But Was there anything that you found challenging about the mix overall besides the plugin? Did you find anything challenging about the stems that were provided or getting them to sit together or anything like that?
A little bit in the initial balancing, the input volume on a lot of these tracks was really low. I mean, wasn't even barely registering on my VU meters. But then output side was really hot before I started messing with it. So I had this really significant imbalance of input levels and output levels.
Was that the plugin chain that it had those stacked features in the plugin that you were using or no?
No. This is just the way that this was the way that the tracks were recorded, I think. Okay. I'm not exactly sure why that is that it was. I didn't put any time into figuring that out. But
got it.
I think it's the way that it was recorded and like the levels in the recording. But when I started working with that, it was obvious in order to gain stages properly, I needed to bring the input volumes up and get that boosted so that I could get a little bit better levels.
Right.
And avoid clipping in the process of trying to get where I wanted to go, you know, because I was pushing the output side so hard. So I'd rather bring if I have headroom in the input side, I wanted to bring that up so I didn't have to push so hard on the output side.
Got it.
So that was a challenge. That was like the first thing. I mean, I had a few. I don't know if you want me to go into them. That was the first thing I came into that I think was probably one of the more significant ways that this set of tracks posed challenges to the mix levels.
Yeah. Now, I really like in your mix, I really like what you did with the vocals. It just had a real clarity and a presence. They just sounded like so natural, but not, you know, gainy, not like distorted and overdriven, which, you know, I don't mind that in this genre in particular, but they just had a really nice clarity and presence. Did you do anything special with the vocals?
No, I tell you what, I think that's why I'm really strongly feeling like I might continue. And I mentioned this to you the other day. I might continue using this BX Console Focusrite plugin because I was impressed with the quality of sound coming out of it where I wasn't feeling like I was hearing the plugin. You know what I mean? And it, especially in the vocals, you know, on the vocals, I've got the BX Console. I've got some compression. I don't have any gate at all. So that all I've got going on vocals there is EQ and compression. And I added a reverb with a mix of dry and wet signal and probably about 30% wet, not much, just enough to give it a little bit of atmosphere. Okay. And that's all I got on it. So this was all really EQ compression and a little bit of reverb to get where I was.
Yeah, that was sounded really good.
You know, and I think the lesson in that is, you know what, less is more. This was a really good vocalist too. I think he's a really talented guy. So,
oh, I do too.
The recording quality was good.
At the end were hot though, but other than that.
Then that was in that vocal too. And I had automation was part of that mixture as well. I didn't mention that, but there's some level automation, especially on the second track of vocals where he's doing some alternative dynamic stuff.
Right.
Yeah. And it was over the top. So
it was over the top. It was hitting the, it was hitting.
Yeah.
It was pegging. Yeah, for sure.
Yep. And so that involved levels automation, and I also had some light leveling automation going on in the main vocal track. Not too much though.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, it sounded good.
So I had kind of thought about listening to your mix as well, and one of the things that stood out to me in yours was just really impressed with the kick drum, and so I wanted to talk to you about how you approached your drums.
Well, the drums in this track, man, I felt like they all had so much bleed from the other microphones. They were kind of hard to blend together at first, and especially the toms, they had a ringing, so I got to use. Now, so my challenge that I assigned myself was that I wanted to use all plugins that I was unfamiliar with or hadn't used before. I have so many plugins that this is my second round of a mix where I've used plugins that I haven't used before. It's like, I got so many.
You're going to have to get more plugins.
No, I got to get rid of some. But I bought one recently that I found is super useful. It's called D-Res, and it's from that Audio Salt company in Mexico City that I like. And it basically is written just to take the ring off of snare and toms, and it worked really well. So that helped with the toms blend. So once I got the main balance, I was not that happy with the snare and the kick overall. And so I did what I like to do generally after I get a basic blend of the top and bottom snare and the in and out kick. Of course, there's just the one. I actually did generate samples. Logic allows you to just like take a track and generate MIDI samples from the main hits. So I blended underneath. I blended some kick samples just to give it a little extra body.
I wanted to do that so bad. So
why didn't you do that?
Well, I was on the minimal
part of your challenge.
I was on the minimalist track. So
yeah.
That's the kind of thing I would always do. And then this time was to be different. So
yeah, I felt like it just gave it a little more. But I wanted it to stand out because the guitars were so heavy. I'm also doing this thing that I'm liking now that I realize what it's doing. I've started in my template. I've added a Michael Brauer style bus where I have, after I have my kick drum my kick drum is blended to one bus and my bass is blended to one bus. Then I have the kick the drums and the bass bus to another bus that does, I guess you want to say, parallel compression, but only on the bottom part of the mix, right?
Right.
So I saw this whole schematic in a not too long ago tape op about Michael Brauer's routing system and how he blends things together. And he has one bus just for the bottom end stuff, one bus for what he called his legato stuff. So I like all the strings and pads and piano. And then he has another one for vocals. And I forget what the fourth one was, but I was really kind of just experimenting with that. And I really liked the way it sounds. So
now interesting. All
my drums and bass go to one bus after they're already bussed together. And that's kind of like a parallel compression to help you know, keep that bottom end under control, but still make it fat.
Yeah. So I wonder why he calls it his legato section, because that to me indicates that he's thinking in terms of a low to no transient type of of audio. And
He runs it through different outboard gear that he likes the quality of. So I kind of drew it up in my own way and then kind of tried to replicate that in software a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's kind of been working for me, so I kind of kept it.
So what did you do like a parallel compression bus for this then? Is that what you said?
Yeah, that's what I have my bass and my drums route to, kind of like a parallel compression bus where it gets another Holtec style EQ on it.
Okay.
It helps, it kind of fattens but tames the bottom end and keeps it thick and good. It's good to have a thick bottom end.
From a high level perspective, then, when you were kind of coming in, I don't know when that happens for you. For me, it was when I was first listening to the song before I jumped into the mixing of it. When and what was the vibe that you were trying to?
Well, I just there was on the website there was, I think, the full song. So I just kind of gave it I didn't even listen to the whole thing. I just gave it a quick listen to go, okay, that's what it sounds like. And then my general thing is I throw all the stems or tracks into a template, and then I don't even listen to them at this part. I just watch the VU meter. I just like level match them so that they're all between the threes as that is, so that they're all starting out at a level before I even start throwing faders up and down. But because the singer sounded like Maynard to me, my kind of target for this song was to make it sound like it could have been on Undertow. It's a big first release. So that was kind of what I was going for. So like a 90s alternative grungy metal vibe,
right?
As kind of analogy as possible, but just kind of commercial sounding without notice that we forgot to mention that these are just mixes, not mastered mixes. So they're the final product of the mixing process, not the whole we're going to release this as a single mastered level, et cetera process.
A disclaimer that we did level match, which required a little bit of limiting on the master bus so that both of our mixes came out approximately the same volume.
True.
So we do have that, but it's not really in the effort of mastering at all. It's more to get these to be
similar in
levels. So
Exactly.
So in your side of the project, then, was there any challenges that stood out more than others that you think are notable?
The drum bleed was a challenge. Getting the drums to blend together while still kind of bleed is when you have one microphone on, say, the hi-hat, but it's picking up the snare, or you have microphones on the toms, but they're picking up the cymbals, that kind of thing. That's bleed. And then sometimes when you just put them all together, it sounds great. Sometimes bleed just helps it all glue together. Sometimes it's challenging because, you know, if you have a microphone on the ride cymbal, but it's only picking up a little bit of the ride, but it's picking up a lot of, you know, crash cymbal, then, you know, you have to do some automation or something, or gating or... But so that was a little bit of a challenge. I used EQ for that. And here, oh, so this was my big challenge. My workflow, because I challenged myself not to use my normal plugins, to use ones that I'm not familiar with. The first thing I usually do after I level match everything is do corrective EQ. And I like to do that with the stock Logic parametric EQ, where I can see the curves and see the histogram of the track as it plays. And I didn't have anything like that. I had to use something that I had to kind of fake it. So I had to play with some different EQs that I wasn't familiar with to kind of do corrective EQ. And that was eye-opening, but uncomfortable for me to do.
That's a notable for me too, because the plugins, anything that I used, I didn't have any metering for EQ, for any visual cues of correction. And that the Focusrite BX Console plugin forced me to rely solely on what I was hearing versus getting confirmation from visual cues plus hearing.
Which, you know, the old timers, of course, will say, mix with your ears, not with your eyes. But
yeah.
I'm a visual guy. I draw, I paint, I photograph, I do graphic design. I like to see where the bump is. I like to see where the dirt is that I can cut off. You know?
Yeah. And the thing about that is, I mean, we've got these tools that do this for us. Not using them is, in my opinion, not advisable. What I would say is, though, don't mix with your eyes. Mix with your ears and validate with your eyes.
Yeah.
And make sure that what your ears are hearing is what your visual cues are telling you. Because sometimes your environment may... This is a good example of when you might have something going wrong with your room environment and the EQ curve of your room and the reproduction of certain frequencies from your monitors. Things that may not be audible to you, but which are visible if you look at them in the right tool. And they give you those cues that, hey, there's something going on here, but my system isn't reproducing that. And it gives you the opportunity to go, I'm going to bounce that. I'm going to go listen to it on something that reproduces that better, or I'll switch monitors. And but you wouldn't necessarily know that if you didn't have the visual cue that came. And so obviously, you know, after years of practice on the same system, you get familiar with what you're doing. So it's not that you can't do great work without visual cues. I'm just saying that they're another tool, and using tools wisely is definitely something that I advise.
Yeah. I mean, I know I can set a high pass and then, you know, sweep to find where I can hear it and then pull it back a bit. I know I can do that. It just takes me a little longer, and I have an efficiency in the workflow that I normally am used to. So anyway, so the challenge for me was that I was, you know, having to kind of make up a new workflow. Other, I would say, besides not having my normal corrective EQ process and having dealing with the drum bleed, I would say my other challenge was that for me, the vocal was very uneven in dynamics, and I ended up doing a lot of volume EQ with it, even after compression, especially on that secondary track.
You mentioned my vocals, and then I noticed something in your work that was related to your guitars that you did that emphasized the vocals. And,
oh, yes.
And I thought maybe that would be a good thing to maybe to describe, because when our listeners maybe review and listen to these mixes, I think maybe they might hear that too, because I really liked what you did to the guitars, which I believe was in an effort to emphasize the vocals.
Describe what you're hearing so that I can think about what I might have done.
Oh,
I'm not sure that's in my notes.
I think that you were working on EQ and panning with the guitars to get them out of the way of the vocals.
Oh, yes.
But yeah, I don't know what you did there.
Well, there were four guitar tracks, and I immediately panned them pretty wide. I just like that sound. Uh, And I'm finding, and I do this more and more, I like to use tape saturation on the guitar bus so that it takes off some of that digital harshness and makes it sound more natural. And when I need to, I will tend to, I know you can do this with a sidechain, like in VocalRider, you can sidechain to say, and I do this a lot actually, to put VocalRider on the main, on the vocal bus, and then you sidechain it to the guitar bus so that whenever the guitars, whenever the vocal's loud, it's kind of like sidechaining. The guitars dip, then they go back. But I think here I might have just ducked out a little EQ. You find kind of the sweet spot of the clarity of the vocals and just duck a little bit out of that in the EQ on the guitar bus to make room for it. Because especially in heavy music, the guitars and the vocals are always kind of fighting for dominance, at least in terms of the frequencies.
Yeah.
But I mean, a good arrangement will have the guitars sit back while the vocals going. And then when the vocalist stops, usually the guitars kind of get louder either through the mix or through the arrangement. Ideally, yeah, the arrangement. But, you know, there's tricks. You can do tricks. I did find a couple of new plugins I really liked that I wasn't sure about before I started. One was that IK Black compressor that was given away free recently. Do you know that one? The IK Multimedia, that black? It's
I don't know that
like,
one.
Oh, it's, I think it's like a bus compressor limiter. Anyway, it's a really nice sound. I use that in a couple spots. Also, the D-Res, which I was mentioning. And that, I don't remember the name of it. It was that, you downloaded it too. It was a classic emulation of a reverb from Abbey Road.
Oh, that's right.
Do you remember that one?
I should have used that.
Like RC-140 or something like
that? Yeah, that's a great reverb. Oh, man.
I used it on one spot and turned the reverb off and just used the saturation on that, and it sounded awesome. And then I used it as a reverb in another spot, and it sounded even more awesome. So I'm really impressed.
That's a great plugin. I totally forgot that
I actually had that. That was the first time I've ever used it. I mean, it just came out, and it was, wasn't it given away free for a limited time?
It was. See,
I love to find these deals. But yeah, boy, that's a good one. That was kind of my approach. I wanted to make it sound like a 90s, you know, like outtake from Tool's Undertow with as much kind of analog quality as possible, but also as much, you know, clarity as I could give it at the same time while mixing with these plugins I was not that familiar with. It was good. Yeah. It was a good challenge. I really enjoyed doing this.
The one thing you mentioned drum or bleed, and in the context of the drums, the worst bleed that I had was coming from the hi-hat mic.
Oh.
And with the ride cymbal right above it.
Yep.
I think, I don't know how they had that configured, but I was getting so much ride in the hi-hat that I couldn't separate them, and not even with gate, because I mean, actually the ride was stronger than the hi-hat, so there was no gating that out.
Yeah, right? Luckily they were separate tracks. I tend to bus all my cymbals and the overheads to one bus, blend them, and then mix them up or down however.
Yeah, I think there might have been a way to potentially phase cancel that out of the hi-hat, but I would have had to play with that to try and
figure out. There were a couple spots, I think, when I flipped the phase, flipped the polarity. Normally you do that with, say, like when you have a top and bottom snare mic and they're pointing directly at each other. That's kind of a no-brainer. You got to flip the polarity. Well,
this was different because it's two different instruments, and there's a bit of delay because I don't know how far away that ride was. It was just so dang loud though, man. I mean.
Yeah, well, so you turn it down.
Yeah. It was so, the ride was so loud in the hi-hat track. So, and I couldn't get it out of there, you know, so.
Yeah, for me, you know, it's always a challenge for me to kind of get that blend of, you know, the overheads and then the actual cymbal mics and then the snare. Because you get a lot of snare in the overheads, you get a lot of cymbals in the overheads, and then there's the room mic. I mean, it's a puzzle. It's a puzzle, and you put it together, and some people are really good at it. I think maybe I just need more practice, but.
Now the toms were getting a bunch of bleed, but that was easy to deal with. I just cut the heads and tails off of
toms, of all the usually, tom stuff. Those are usually so infrequent for the most part that they're just right there. You can just snip them.
Yeah.
So I meant to mention that one of the funny things about a challenge like this where you're downloading stems to me is that you don't have any mix notes, and you just kind of have to make it up. You're like, you can't talk to the client and say, hey, so what vibe are you looking for? What do you want it to sound like? And you can't go back and have them go, yeah, you know what? Turn up the guitar. Yeah. I mean, you have to kind of make up your own.
what sounds good to you. And that was an interesting part. So I was,
you know, choose your own adventure.
Right. And, you know, obviously this tin for both of us was, you know, it had a tool influence. Yes. So, I mean, that was kind of a given where it was going just because that was the intention upon choosing this song. It's like, this guy sounds like Maynard. I want to mix this.
Exactly. Yeah. And I've heard that before where, you know, a lot of pro mixers will say, you know, the rough mix will tell you everything you need to know about the band's intentions.
Yeah.
Like if it's bass heavy, then that's kind of what direction they want it to go. And not that you would mix it exactly like the rough, obviously, but it's kind of supposed to inform, you know, okay, this is the taste that they have that they're looking for. But on the other hand, if they liked it that much, they wouldn't be coming to you and saying, hey, do this better.
There were some smart things here, too. I mean, you know, this came with a bass DI track.
Yes.
I think they knew they needed this bass to be able to be cut through in post, you know, so that because it was getting buried in there.
Yeah, it was blending a lot. And I did have to, you did some treatment to it, you mentioned.
Yeah, this is one other place where I actually used a plugin. I was resisting it, but I was like, I don't know another way to bring this out. And so I added a two notes cab simulator and amplifier on that bass DI track. And then I gave it its own compression within that plugin and EQ and leveraged the DI to get that bass to cut through the mix like I wanted it. I think it was just really buried in all the sub. It was just a kind of a flabby mix, if you know what I mean. I don't know if you heard that.
Yeah, no, but it was. There wasn't a lot of top end to help it cut.
Yeah.
So I had forgotten that I just got a new bass amp sim. Oh, or I would have used it because I haven't used it yet. But instead, I bust it to. I usually have a dirt bus. So I have a bunch of buses in my, a bunch of sends, some aux sends in my template. And I switched out the plugins for this purpose, but, I, you know, I have a delay, like a tape delay. I have a reverb, right. I have a parallel compression, and I have what I call a dirt bus, which has, you know, either like Devil Lock or some other gritty, you know, dirty thing. Then you can just mix a little bit of that. You know, you send a little bit of your vocals to that and it helps it cut, or you send a little bit of the bass to that and it gives it, you know, that dirty distortion saturation that helps
it
stand out in a mix. And this, the bass did need that.
Yeah. And that's basically what happened, what I did with mine. I used a tube amplifier sim and I gave it some tube saturation in the gain stage of that amp. And and that is what it needed. So, you know, it's really interesting how well saturation works.
Oh, I love it. I use it everywhere.
Vocals, or it works on just about anything.
Yeah, it's like Frank's Red Hot. I put that stuff on everything. Yeah, this is a fun challenge.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed doing this. And my favorite part about it was kind of hearing how different people approach the same problems, because that really is kind of what mixing is. It's creative problem solving and just kind of break down, okay, here's how I approached it. Here's how you approached it. Here's how we kind of came to similar ends with completely different starts.
Sure. And then other things, the other side of that was things that you might have found to be a problem that I didn't, or vice versa. You know, so one person's problem is another person's, I've come across it before. You've seen the same thing or done something that I haven't seen before. And so
there's no problems, only challenges.
Yeah. I was reading on the where we got these tracks from, and a lot of people were saying how messed up this recording was, and
that's funny.
There were complaints on it and stuff. And in my opinion, this was a pretty good recording.
I thought it was too.
It had its things, but I wouldn't be complaining about it. I don't think. I mean, it was definitely workable. I think the mixes and what came out here sounds pretty good. And definitely what I have, I think, is a good start. I'd like to continue on with it. I probably won't because of time, but I've had a good time with it, and it's taught me a few things, and that I want to continue, you know, keep working on.
Yeah, I enjoy doing challenges like this where, like I've done recently, a mix where I only used, actually last week, just for fun, just to learn it. I did a mix from the same site where I only use the SSL, the Waves SSL console plugin. Because it's a confusing plugin for me. So I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to make a mix where this is all I use on every track until I figure the thing out.
That's the same experience. So, you know, coming out the other end of this, it's like I have a good understanding of the basic functionality of this entire plugin now. And it's not just a simple does one thing plugin. Like you have mostly this is an entire
chain and a plugin. Those are challenging.
So many sections of it to learn and how they all work together. So it becomes pretty complex. So, right. And there's still more that I haven't touched on in that and need to learn about the plugin. So
yeah, but this is a great way. If you have
really impressed with it
and you're not sure how to use it, and you know, I don't know about you, but reading the manual does nothing for me when it comes to software. Yes, I'm in IT. Why do you ask?
I know. I jumped in on it too. The only thing I tried to read about was if it was possible to sidechain the way that I wanted to.
Oh, yeah. See, stuff like that, there's no way you could figure that out on your own. But, you know, get in to mess around. But if you challenge yourself, say, okay, in this mix, I'm going to use this somewhere. It will force you to figure it out. I think that's a good way to learn something.
And there's some things that are hard to hear. It's hard to hear compression because compression is taking away. It's not adding to. And so that's a difficult thing to hear if you haven't practiced hearing it.
Yeah. Well, sometimes what you need to do is just put it on and then turn the knob all the way up.
Yeah.
And go, oh, that's what it's doing. And then back it off and then turn the next knob all the way up and go, oh, okay, that's what it's doing.
Yeah. But sometimes you do that and there's no audible difference. And it's hard to tell what that's exactly. Because
you have it in bypass.
Yeah, exactly. So
you're like, what? Wow, it sounds better. No, it doesn't. Wait. Oh, I've had the plugin in bypass for the last 10 minutes. Dang it. I've never done that. No.
Just for example.
I heard about that
somewhere. Yeah, I read that on Twitter once.
There you go. It was my Twitter. All right. I think this was enlightening. I think this was fun.
Yes, it was.
I hope this was enlightening and or fun for other people. And I just want to reiterate, thanks so much for listening to us babble on about music and audio and stuff.
It's a good time.
Yeah. It's my becoming my favorite thing of the week. I
want to definitely thank our listeners. I appreciate you bringing that up at the beginning, Matt, because we do appreciate our listeners. And we hope that you'll let other people know about this podcast and share it, please. And, you know, we're just hoping to have fun and talk about audio and music and get a conversation going with as many people about it as we can.
Yeah, if you dig it, leave us a comment. And if you have suggestions for future episodes, let us know. We have some interviews coming up, some other stuff going on. But definitely let us know if you have anything specific you want us to talk about.
All right. Have a good one.
Have a good one. Thanks. Well, that's it for another episode of the Indie Music Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, leave us a comment or a review and share with your friends. Hit us up on our website at indiemusiccast.com. Find myself on Twitter at Mojo's Army. Find Douglas on Twitter at Rezo Studio. Thanks. Until next time, keep creating.